Hello and welcome back to the Fifth Quarter Footy Podcast. My name's Luke and today we're going to be discussing Melbourne and North Melbourne and how they're going to go in 2023. With me I've got Dieter who will be taking us through his analysis as well as mine, and we're going to be discussing a few key indicators for each of these teams. Firstly, we're going to look at the ins and outs of both of these clubs, so players leaving, players coming in. We're going to look at a general prediction that we have for them for this season, what the club should be aiming for, a player or players ready to take the next step, and then some individual players who might be slightly under the pump. Dieter, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm going well. It's going to be interesting hearing those two teams. Obviously, Melbourne, having recently won a grand final in the last few years, will be very different to North of Melbourne, who have won two wooden spoons. So two different lists, and always exciting to look at those and compare and contrast them and how they're going.
Yeah, so I'm going to be the one that takes us through Melbourne. So sit back and relax, Cedar, before you have to get up and at it for North. But let's look at the Melbourne ins and outs. Honestly, for a team that's done so well in the past few seasons, they were fairly active in the off-season, which is exciting to see. And I think, overall, I like the moves that they made. I think it does make them a slightly better team. In terms of their ins, they brought in an A-grader to a T, and that is Brody Grundy. They've got the ultimate ruck duo of Gawn and Grundy that every Supercoach player in the past 5 to 10 years has just admired and loved. They've got the Gawndy combination now. Whether they coexist together or not, well, that remains to be seen. But I love the fact that they've gone and got Brody Grundy. They've got Lockie Hunter, you know, specialised winger who can probably move inside if he needs to. Again, they got him for not much. He was a guy who has had a whole range of off-field issues and a couple injuries here and there. So they've brought him into the team. And then they've got Josh Shackey from the Dogs as well, who just adds to their forward depth. And I don't hate that at all. You know, obviously a very high draft pick back in the day, and I think he's going to add something to Melbourne that they probably have needed, which is some forward depth. In terms of the draft, they had one first round pick with Matthew Jefferson at pick 15. Outside of that, they had a couple of later selections as well. Dieter, what are your thoughts on their ins?
Yeah, I think any club bringing in a Brody Grundy, who's, you know, arguably the second best ruck in the last 5 years, I think that only improves them. But like you said, whether that Gawn and Grundy can coexist in the same best 22 remains to be seen. Or it'll be very strange seeing Brody Grundy in some different colours. Lockie Hunter and Josh Shackey moving from the Bulldogs hurts, but I think Lockie Hunter, last few seasons have been down, but you know, he's one of only 5 or 6 players in the league that is a traditional winger, and I think that really adds to their wing divisions that also has Ed Langdon, who I think that's just going to be a bit scary to be playing up against, because I think Langdon on one wing and Hunter on the other wing really will command the MCG, which Melbourne generally plays most of their games there, so it's going to be a bit scary for oppositions to try to tag one or both of them. And Shackey, just a bit of depth for them in the forward line.
Absolutely. And the one thing I really like about the ins is that, you know, they have complemented the outs. Luke Jackson obviously leaving to the Freo Dockers. Grundy is that direct replacement. Obviously, Jackson has a much longer future in the league. But that being said, I think it was always going to happen. Jackson was going to go back to the West. He was going to warrant a lot of money. He was going to warrant just... He was going to want that number one ruck spot, I think. And I just don't think that was a viable option on with Melbourne's timeline right now in terms of when they want to be winning a flag. So... seeing him go does hurt, but you know, they bring in an A-grader in Brody Grundy to play that role. They've also sent Sam Wiedemann to Essendon, who is a key forward who just couldn't really get it right at Melbourne. He just never really clicked, and I think that's a great get for Essendon. purely because it's a new environment, new club. He can get another chance. And in terms of Melbourne, they've replaced him with Josh Sackey, who can be that that same player really on that list, that first forward in if something happens. He can maybe be a bit of a ruck relief if, you know, a Grundy or Gawn do go down. So I really like the fact that they've replaced the outs with their ins. In terms of some other outs of note, they've Toby Bedford went to the Giants, Jaden Hunt to the Eagles, Oscar Baker has gone to the Bulldogs, and a few other players, Mitch Brown, Magic Dorn, and Fraser Rosman, have left the club.
Yeah, I think Luke Jackson really hurts. A number three pick a few years ago. Incredible talent, incredible mobility for someone of his height and size. You know, Brody Grundy in the short term sort of alleviates that pain, but I think Luke Jackson for the next 10 years might be certainly the hottest ticket given his ability around the ground. Yeah, Sam Wiedemann, unfortunately, never really had the consistency that Melbourne needed and was just too hot and cold. You know, he'd go missing in games, but I think now at Essendon, he can be a real focal point for Essendon's forward line, and that probably builds up his confidence a bit more. And then they lost a few depth players, but, you know, I think bringing in Hunter and Sackey sort of alleviates that sort of pain. What are your predictions moving into the 2023 season?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people somewhat share the same sort of prediction with Melbourne. I've got them finishing top two on the ladder, with them aiming to win the flag. I think it'd be ridiculous for them not to be wanting to go for the flag this year, given how good they have been the last few years. And, you know, they've done it recently, so they know what it takes, and their list is arguably one of, if not the best list in the league. There's definitely a case for it. So I think they're going to finish probably on top of the ladder, if not second. What do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We've touched upon this before, but a lot of the top eight teams have really enhanced their squads, whether that's through the draft, free agency, or delisted free agents. I think I can imagine Melbourne finishing no lower than fourth, but it's going to be a real tight fight for any of the four clubs trying to get that home first week of finals. Melbourne, yeah, have the list to finish first or finish fourth. It's going to be a really exciting year for Melbourne fans.
Absolutely. We'll go straight into some individual players, I think, and we'll look at some guys ready to take the next step. With Melbourne, I actually found this really tough because their list is already so good and so well-rounded, and finding a guy who I think can elevate his game to the next level was somewhat difficult, but I settled on Trent Rivers as a guy who sort of has been playing as that half-backman, pushing up the ground, being that rebounder. I think he's the one player who I could see really expanding his game and becoming more of a weapon going forward for them. Outside of that, I actually found it quite hard to think of an individual player. The other obvious option was maybe like a Cozzy Pickett, who he's obviously already such an exciting player, goal sneak. If he can get more consistent with his goal scoring, that's a guy who I think could become even more of a danger for opposition teams. Outside of that, though, yeah, everyone's already so bloody good. I can't picture them getting better. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Melbourne just have the luxury of being a really experienced club, as well as having a really experienced core group of players in their best 22. And you just look at them on the score on the team sheet. They've got stars all over the ground who have been either all Australians or best and fairest, or, you know, they've got so much talent, and they've brought in, you know, another Brody Grundy and Lockie Hunter. That just makes them more dangerous. But yeah, I think, yeah, Trent Rivers is a great player to take that next step. He was in and out of the team a bit. Hopefully he can get his body right, because I think he's injured as well. yeah, maybe Cozzy Pickett can kick a few more goals. I think there's going to be some question marks over his signature stain at Melbourne, but you know, he's one of the most exciting players in the competition, so if he can kick a few more goals, I think that alleviates probably Melbourne's most dysfunctional forward line in a while. So yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some players under pressure, this again a bit like the players ready to take the next step, I found it pretty tough to pick players under pressure, but I have gone with one player who really forced his way into the team a couple seasons ago, was really unlucky to miss out on the grand final, and last season really sort of cemented a spot, and then out of nowhere sort of started coming in and out. So, and that's James Jordan. He's been the guy who has been sort of that other winger as opposed to Langdon, with Brayshaw moving onto that half back line, being a facilitator down there. But James Jordan, yeah, he's a funny player. He seems to have just slotted in nicely on the wing. And he really did, in every sense of the word, force his way into the team a couple of seasons ago. He wasn't really someone who was expected to play, and then it was just his consistent form in the reserves that got him there. That being said, now with Lockie Hunter coming into the team, that's his biggest competition for that wing spot. And unless Jordan can, you know, change his game a little bit and, you know, maybe add some more inside play to it, I think he's going to find it hard to keep his spot in the 22. Outside of that, I guess with Melbourne, the biggest pressure is just on the fringe players. Can they put pressure on the guys ahead of them to get games? Because a team this good is just going to be so hard to break into if you're wanting good opportunity. I look at Josh Shackey, who's come in, and you know, I think he's going to be a good depth player, but he might not even be the first player in at this stage, with a young player like Jacob Van Rooyen, I think you say his name. He's apparently having a great off-season, and he can play forward if there was an injury. So it's a really interesting dynamic at Melbourne. What do you think?
Yeah, I think James Jordan's really gone under the radar, I guess, in recent years, because he has sort of locked down that wing role opposing Ed Langdon. But yeah, Hunter coming in is going to put a bit more pressure on him, and it's going to be hard to see anyone breaking into an established Melbourne team. Somehow Brody Grundy and Hunter are going to hopefully step into that. But yeah, I think for me, their biggest pressure is probably their forward line. They just did not work at all last year, and they had so many matchups or team selections in their best six, and you know, Tom McDonald was injured throughout this year, Ben Brown was injured and underperforming, Wiedemann was in and out underperforming. They just didn't have that guaranteed avenue to goal. And even Luke Jackson, you know, he wasn't able to kick a goal a game. He still presented well, but they really need to find different avenues to goal just to help kick a winning score. You saw late in the season, and especially in the finals, that they just couldn't kick a winning score. So hopefully with, you know, Jacob Van Rooyen coming in, maybe Tom McDonald getting back on the park, and Ben Brown managing his knees, I think that'll really help them push for that top one or two spots on the ladder and help them get a home finals come round one of the finals. So anything else for you to say?
Yeah, all I could say is I wouldn't be surprised if we hear in the late days of September there's a grand old flag, that's for sure. I think they really are a true premiership contender in every sense of the word. I really do look forward to watching them. I think they're going to be very exciting. That being said, I think it's time we move right down to the other side of the league, and that is the bottom of the ladder, which unfortunately is the harsh reality that North Melbourne have been facing lately. Dina, do you want to take us through North?
Yeah, so They've had a very interesting off-season, North Melbourne. Some big outs as well as some equally big ins. They've obviously traded Jason Horne-Francis, which is probably huge given he was number one pick only a year ago and he's only been able to stay at the club for 1 year before returning home to SA. But they also traded out their number one pick in last year's draft a few months ago. Obviously, they packaged that up for 3 first-round picks, but it just shows that they've been down on the bottom of the ladder for quite a while. And even, you know, trading 2 first-round picks in the player that Jason Horne-Francis is and the actual number one pick in the 2022 draft, that just shows how dire things might be at Clubland. And another big out for the Roos is Jared Polek, who I think they delisted with 1 year going on his contract. He came across from Port Adelaide on a 5-year deal worth north of $700,000. So I think that just... I mean, it hurts their back pocket losing a player yet still paying him. So that's just an interesting situation for them to be going under, and sort of asks questions of their recruiting and list management staff, having a player like that on your books but not wanting to play him. But in terms of key-ins, they've actually brought in a depth of talent. They've got some senior bodies in Griffin Logue and Darcy Tucker from Frio. They were able to get those two players from some AFL assistance. They were given a future second and future third round pick, so they packaged them up to receive Griffin Logue and Tucker, and I think that certainly helps them out. Definitely Logue, I think he's really good as a defender, but he was sort of moved around a bit at Frio, but I think Alistair Clarkson wants to play him as a second or third key defender. Daniel Howes and Liam Shields, I think, are really great ins for them. Crossing from Hawthorn, and who have also previously played under Clarko. I think that just adds a bit of experience and depth, and players that Clarkson can rely on if needed to step in. But that North Melbourne also had an exciting draft hand. They had 3 picks inside top 30. They got Harry Sheezel at pick 3, who's a half forward midfielder who's got incredible skills around inside forward 50, and then George Wardlaw, a very powerful midfielder who's obviously injury riddled throughout 2022, but was in contention for the number one pick, so hopefully he can get his injuries under get his injuries better for the upcoming season. And then Braden George slipped a bit, given he's done his ACL, but at pick 26, someone who is rated as a top 10 player, I think he's really exciting for the future. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, lots to unpack there. I'll just touch on a few of the key names that I'm seeing. Obviously, losing Jason Horne-Francis and even just the circumstances around it was a shame. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him really flourish in Port. He was the number one draft pick for a reason. Obviously, I think most people probably had him as the second best player in his draft pool. Still probably is, in my opinion, behind Dacos, that is. But yeah, losing him is terrible. But one thing I did love was the trade they did with pick 1. Now, just for a bit of context into how that actually played out, they gave pick 1 to the Giants, who took Aaron Cadman, who I really don't think was someone that North were interested in with a pick that high. Obviously, then they bid it on Will Ashcroft at pick 2, Brisbane matched. And so they probably got, with pick 3, Harry Sheezel, the player they were probably looking to pick up with pick 1. They got him at pick 3. And then they had another pick in their back pocket of George Wardlaw, where they said, all right, we'll take not only the player we always wanted, but we'll take him and the next best as well. So I thought that was really good business from North in terms of the dynamics around that trade. That being said, you are right. When you start making moves like that, it can backfire pretty quickly too, and it's not something you see many clubs do, and it's often, you know, sort of a desperate times, desperate measures kind of situation that you see that in. Looking at the ins though, I mean, Logue, Tucker and Shields, I'm a big fan of all of them. They bring great AFL experience. I think Liam Shields just brings a wealth of experience in terms of premiership success, playing under Clarkson previously, and he understands the system, so he's going to walk in knowing really what's going on from the get-go. Tucker and Logue just guys that probably wouldn't have got a game that frequently at Freo, so that's good business from North. As you said, there was a bit of an AFL handout, but you take that and you got to use it well. Daniel Howe, I don't really rate him as a player personally, but he adds something. He adds a bit more experience to that list, which I just think they need. They just need to get fresh bodies who are ready to go straight out the bat, because it's been so hard watching North the last couple of years, and I couldn't imagine what it's been like for North Melbourne fans.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a great point. I think it's also interesting in their trading of pick one last year. I think of all the needs that North Melbourne have, they really need a new young key forward. And although our personal opinions are that Aaron Cadman might not have been pick one worthy in front of Ashcroft, you know, they really do need another key forward. So I think missing out on a Cadman, whether he was pick one or not, I think that just probably hurts them in the long run. They've targeted midfielders as their, I guess, desire to have an extremely competitive and strong midfield, which, you know, you can't really blame them. But when you have access to high draft picks that are key forwards or key backs or even rucks, you know, Luke Jackson was a pick three. You really, you know, those quality tall forwards and key position players don't really grow on trees. And when you have a pick one, you really do need to sort of look towards the long-term future. And I think, you know, if Cadman has an exceptional career at GWS, you might have to ask yourselves, what did North really give up to acquire that? But, you know, they've really loaded up for the now in terms of getting that experience to help transition the cellar dwellers that North are to hopefully moving up the ladder. In terms of my prediction, I can't see them moving up beyond 14th position. There's sort of a group of teams down on the bottom of the ladder that, you know, it's going to be hard to see who goes where. This will be Alistair Clarkson's first year in charge. He's got obviously a bit of controversy having exited Hawthorn, and we don't know if that's going to sort of come with him to his new club. But, you know, Clarko might be one of the best one-day coaches in AFL history, so you can't discount a legend that is Clarko. So he'll have his tricks up his sleeve. He's brought in a few Hawthorn personnel, whether they're players or coaches. So I think, hopefully, that North Melbourne don't finish with a third wooden spoon. And I think that's their aim, really. If they can escape a third consecutive wooden spoon, I think that'll be a win. Whether or not they'll achieve that, we're not sure. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I do agree with the prediction. I don't see him finishing higher than 14th either, personally. I don't think they win this. They get the spoon, though. I shouldn't say win the spoon, because you don't really want to be winning that. I think I have them above Hawthorn and GWS going into the season in terms of kind of where their list is at, I think, right now. Adding guys like Logue, Tucker, Shields, Howe, you know, AFL experience, it's something that Hawthorn are lacking a little bit of. So, yeah, and I just think that they've got a little more potential to get a couple more wins than those other teams going into 2023. So, yeah, but that being said, I don't see him finishing higher than 14th. their list is still a far way behind the teams that could potentially contend for a top eight spot for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating watch. I think my personal opinion is that North will be fighting Hawthorn for bottom two, or bottom one, really. And it'll be throwing a blanket over who that player or team is to win the wooden spoon. But moving on, the player that I think will take the next step for North Melbourne is Will Phillips. He was a very high draft pick back in 2022, being pick four, and touted as a future leader at the club. Unfortunately, he's had a lot of health issues his first two seasons in the AFL system. And from all reports, he's back to full health and really driving standards at North Melbourne and has been given ample opportunities in the intra-club games to showcase his ability. He's an inside midfielder. And I'm, hoping that he is able to string a full season together or close to showcase North Melbourne fans why he was a pick number four in what is considered very high or strong draft back in 2020.
Yeah, I like that call with Phillips. He's probably a player you could also put under pressure a little bit just because he was such a high draft pick. If he can get it right this year, which I think he will, I think that'll be a massive, boost for North Melbourne fans just to see that one of their higher draft picks has sort of worked out. Just because, you know, there hasn't been much to celebrate the last few years being a North fan. It just all seems to have gone wrong for a while. I like Will Phillips. Another player who I sort of thought could be in this category was Curtis Taylor. I really like his game and how he's progressed. But they're a young team. There's so many names you could probably put in this category, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think something to note as well is North have identified trying to build the best or improving midfield that they can. And I think with what they have right now, they've got Cunningham returning from health issues. They've got Jai Simkin, who's now a co-captain. They've got Luke Davies-Uniacke. You know, they're three leaders of the midfield brigade that, you know, is impressive compared to any other midfield in the competition. And then you add in, you know, your Will Phillips, your Tom George Wardlers, your Tom Powell, even Hugh Greenwoods. I think they're exciting and they're really building towards what North are really hoping for, which is really being competitive and aiming for some finals experience or finals taste in the years to come. But moving on, I've noted quite a few people or players under the pressure for 2023, each for their own different reasons. So I'll quickly note down all those people. But I think, first and foremost, I think their recruiting and list management staff really need to be have a good look at themselves for some questionable decisions in regarding their list, whether they've cut too deep over the past few years or brought in the wrong personnel based on their age, experience, or ability. Jaden Stevenson, I think, you know, there's a lot of questions as to whether he finds his NAB Rising Star form from Collingwood years. Aiden Bonner, a high draft pick that didn't work out at GWS. He's in a bit of no man's land. Hugh Greenwood really dropped off his output that he had at Gold Coast. Callum Coleman-Jones, North Melbourne used a second round draft pick on him, which turned out to be a pick 19. That obviously slid, but he really hasn't been able to show in the first year that he's, you know, even worthy to make the best 22 at North Melbourne, which is a bit of a worry given North Melbourne finished with two wooden spoons in a row. Tom Powell's really been impacted from his first season of footy. He hasn't been able to capture his winning form that saw him really impress all spectators in his first year. Jacob Edwards, the number one pick in the preseason draft 2 years ago, hasn't been cited at AFL level, and there's going to be some question marks as to how long you sort of try with a player like that. And Tristan Cherry really needs to improve his output this year, given that Goldstein's aging. What are your thoughts in that list? Is it a bit harsh?
I'll go through one at a time. So recruiting and list management, yep, I agree. There's not too much more to be said. Stevenson, I like the name you've put next to him in your notes. You've put Reece Palmer 2.0 question mark. For those of you who don't know, Reece Palmer quite controversially won the Rising Star one year and went on to have quite a lackluster career. A long career, to be fair to him. He did play longer than expected, but really did not kick on. So, yeah, Jaden Stevenson really does need to pull his finger out this year. He needs to show people that he is the player that, you know, North Melbourne saw in him, like that we saw in him in that Rising Star year for sure. Aiden Bonner, Hugh Greenwood, yeah, both been a bit disappointing since getting there. Callum Coleman-Jones, I mean, yes, the pressure is on him, but that I think that ties very well into the recruiting and list management staff. I think Richmond knew exactly what they were doing when they gave him away for a second round pick, especially to North Melbourne, who's picks are always very high given their low finishing on the ladder. Tom Powell, I think, is a bit stiff to be on this list, personally. I think he's going to be fine. He was, if I recall correctly, he was the same draft as Will Phillips. I think he'll be fine. He had a great first year. He did come back down a little bit last year, but I really do think he'll do well. And he's got a great crop of players in that midfield to help build him up as well. We can't ignore the fact that they've got guys like Cunnington, Davies Uniacke and Simpkin, all guys who are, you know, probably you can say that they're A-graders in their positions these days. So I think Tom Powell will be fine. Jacob Edwards, agree, needs to do more. And I think Tristan Cherry is very stiff to be in this list. I thought he had a pretty good year last year. I think he got injured, which sort of hindered his season quite a bit. He was a very popular pick at the start of Supercoach last year. So he had a lot of pressure on him with the eyes on him there. And he was shining pretty well at the start of last season. If he can play like that, I think he's going to be more than fine. And he's got such a great opportunity with Goldstein. You know, Goldstein's been one of the top five rucks for so long now. With him coming to sort of the ending years of his career, well, yeah, Tristan Cherry's opportunity to take that spot and, you know, make a really big career for himself.
Yeah, I think Tristan Cherry really needs to take a hold of the ruck position at North Melbourne. And I think I'll be disappointed if both Cherry and Goldstein are fit, but Goldstein plays more games than him. I think being on this position in the under pressure players, I think Tristan Cherry shouldn't be handed the number one ruck position. I think he really needs to take a hold of it and really force Goldstein out. You know, Goldstein's a legend at North Melbourne, but I think moving forward, Cherry is the ruck of the future, and he really needs to showcase that while Goldstein's still in his prime, that Tristan is the future. So I think, A lot of eyes on him this year, given, you know, Goldstein's age is slowly creeping towards retirement. But yeah, that's it for North Melbourne. You'll hear us again in the future. We'll be hopefully finishing off our list previews.
Yeah, absolutely. So great analysis there, I think, from Melbourne and North. Two very different teams. And their fan bases are going to be expecting two very different things, I'd say. Next episode, we will be looking at Port Adelaide and Richmond as we come towards sort of the back half of our season previews. We have really enjoyed doing this. We hope that you guys have enjoyed it as well. Please be sure to send us a message on Twitter. Check out the Twitter. We're pretty active on there. So if you want to get in touch, that'd be great. Give us some feedback. That's also very welcomed. We love hearing your thoughts, and we love hearing different opinions as well. We don't get too defensive about what we think. So If you do have a different opinion to us, please let us know. We find it quite interesting and fun. But yeah, I think that's been really good. Dita, do you have any final words to say?
Yeah, looking forward to diving into the final third of the list previews. Yeah, we're excited to see some of these teams that are going to be competing for the top eight and top four and even maybe a flag. So you'll hear from us in the next week or two with some new podcasts. So yeah, we're excited to share them with the footy community.
Thank you. Have a good one, guys.